You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Johnson.
Of the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz at the Movies.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Bing is for doing, and we are here doing another AfterBuzz After Movie for the way, way back. I'm your host, John Comerford, and I'm joined in the studio by Tamara Bird.
Hey, everybody.
Also, Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
And Dimitri Panos.
Hello.
And helming the booth and chiming in from time to time is Phil Svitek.
Hello, everybody.
There he goes. All right.
How is everyone today?
All right, the way,
awesome.
Way back. That's
wicked
in,
awesome.
In honor of the water whiz, let's dive right in. Give me your overall thoughts. Jump in. Let's hear Dimitri.
I love this movie. It's a great coming-of-age story that pretty much has it all. You got great drama. But most importantly, for a coming-of-age movie, you have to have heart. Yeah. And this movie has a lot of heart. Great characters, some you love, some you hate.
Yeah.
But it also captures a feeling. It captures a time. It pretends to capture a time, which
yeah.
we can talk about
yeah,
later,
we will get to
which
that.
Is
yes,
great.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it just really it captures this. It's one of these great movies for the summer
right.
when you countermand it against
yeah.
a large, big
great
budget
counter programming.
It's great. And it's super for that. And I always look for these kind of movies
yeah.
in the summer. Last year, we had two great movies, Safety Not Guaranteed,
yeah.
Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah.
You know, and this year we have this movie, which mm-hmm. it's just a really, when you leave the theater, you feel good.
Yeah.
You feel good about what you just saw. You love the characters.
Yeah.
So, big fan of this movie.
Marissa, how do you want to join it?
Wicked.
I liked it. It was cute. It was very relatable for anyone who has siblings, for families, really.
Yeah.
And I liked the adult aspect storylines and then the younger adults. So, it had a nice balance of drama and comedy. Mm-hmm.
What do you want to add?
I'll say this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ready
Phil.
For this? Okay. No, because I saw...
Phil's chomping at the bit. Go ahead.
No, because I saw this movie, and I was really excited. And when I went, it was pretty much sold out, you know, to the fact that I hate when people sit next to me. I sat in the front. I sat in the front in the corner.
Okay.
People sat next to me. But that just goes to show how much people were enjoying this movie. And I come back, and I said, you know, we're ready to talk about this versus here, and then we have a few interns here at AfterBuzz.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I didn't care for it.
It's
like, what?
Really?
What,
oh,
why
okay.
didn't you care for it? I'm like, haven't you ever seen Stand By Me, Flipped, Sandlot, Heavyweights,
Breakfast Meatballs.
Club, Meatballs, yeah. American Graffiti, Kid, yeah. any of these movies? He's like, no.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
Like, so this is.
So they didn't get it.
They didn't
yeah.
get it, and it just. I'm surprised at how much kids are really robbed of this kind of experience.
They're missing a whole genre of film.
Yeah.
That's a
wow.
really great analogy.
Wow. All yeah. right, Tamara. And you?
I loved it, and mm-hmm. I thought it was sort of transportive in the sense of not the time thing, but the, you know, everybody's had some sort of experience in their life that they can relate to in this movie. And so, you know, you go back to that favorite summer that you
yeah.
had, the time mm-hmm. that you spent in the mountains or at the beach or whatever, and so it just kind of, you know, took you there, and I love that it was short.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the, like, everybody is complaining about how long movies are running these days
yeah.
and how they don't know how to shorten them, they don't know how to edit them and just keep in the good things, and I think they just, it was so perfectly timed that, you know, when it was over, I felt completely satisfied, and you know, not like I had just drudged through anything like mm-hmm. you do with several of the movies that are out this summer, you know?
Yeah, I gotta say, when it was over, I was like, what
do you mean it's only two,
well,
whatever
yeah,
what time
okay.
it was?
Okay. And I'll tell you, there have been two other movies that are coming-of-age stories that I saw, smaller movies.
Mm-hmm.
There was this movie called The Kings of Summer that came out earlier this year. And this movie was given a comparison to Stand By Me. So going into it, I'm thinking, you know...
I mean, The Kings of Summer was compared to...
Correct.
Okay, great.
And so if you're going into a movie and you're being compared to Stand By Me,
yeah.
you better deliver.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say the movie was bad. I liked it,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't have heart. It didn't have the heart that Way, Way Back did. The other movie that we just saw this past week was a movie called The To-Do List with Aubrey Plaza.
Okay.
Another coming-of-age story,
right. I know this. Yeah.
which was very funny. Mm-hmm. It was funny, but had no heart. Mm-hmm. Again, and it was hard to even empathize with the main character. This one, you know, this one just nails it from beginning to end. And like you said, you're right. I mean, there were things that I was thinking about, like my summers in Exeter, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
You know, my first crush, and mm-hmm. you know, and how I wished I had had the courage to kiss her,
right.
or to go to, you know, yeah. stuff like that. And this movie gets it.
Yeah.
I was never called a three. that I could, not to my
to your face.
Not for your mom's boyfriend.
Yeah, no,
oh,
no.
God.
But yeah, it was. Yeah, to all your points, it was. It's just a really good movie. It's really, I can't wait
this
for the Blu-ray.
You know, literally, you know, the joke is, you know, it's a feel good movie of the summer. This one happens to be that. I don't know that there is another one out there that has that kind of this kind of feeling to it.
No, absolutely.
Anything out there that you know of? That reaches this level, because this one kind of plays around on all those levels.
No, not this summer. Not that I've seen. I mean, I could point to Star Trek, which made me giddy.
Yeah.
I can point to Pacific Rim, which
right.
you know, which
yeah, but
focused
you
on my
you
inner
never
10-year-old.
You classify those as a feel good movie of the summer.
No, but yeah. you know, no, I like I didn't walk out, you know, with I guess the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah.
You know.
So Marissa, you being the youngest on the panel, were you aware of the genre, right?
I mean, you know, because it wasn't too long ago that I was that angsty teenager that went through all that and had problems with my own family. So
please tell us.
The thing I loved about this movie is that there's different perspectives from everyone.
Yes.
We have the adult male, the adult female, the young adult female, and the young adult male. So we got a lot of different elements that people can just touch upon for each of these characters.
All right, okay. Let's get into the making of this. Now, obviously, this is the directorial debut of Nat Faxon and Jim Rash.
Can I just say Nat Faxon? That's a fake name, isn't it? It's
not
gonna be a fake name.
No,
it's a super cool name. It just sounds like superhero.
It does sound like a superhero.
Or like, you know, a gumshoe detective.
Yeah,
Nat Faxon on the case.
So they obviously were writers. They previously won their Academy Award for The Descendants.
The Descendants, yes,
which was so funny because I like The Descendants, and watching this movie, it really felt like The Descendants.
Oh,
and then
I
didn't realize that it was from the same writers. I was like, oh, that makes sense then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have an identifiable style,
same vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, and they have a great, I think, sensibility of blending comedy with drama.
Yeah, they know just when to just when to use the comedy to cut out whatever, so it doesn't get into melodrama.
And The Descendants, I think, The Descendants is pretty heavy at times, you know, but it was based off a book, so they got, you know, best adaptation. And that helped them a bit. But yeah, no, I think the coming together of this movie for these two guys, I mean, they met.
Let's talk about this more. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. All right, so these two gentlemen, they met out here, and the genesis of the story is actually the opening of the movie with Steve Carell's character, Trent, is talking with Duncan. Now, we know that the way back, it represents being in that back seat.
Way back.
By the way, turning.
I had said there were seven siblings in my family, so there was a way back for me. And
I sat that way back
quite
a few times.
I sat in
cars as well.
And I want to keep this in mind because if we talk about awkwardness later, but we'll get to that. So I believe it was Nat Faxon.
Yeah.
You know, he had a situation
it's
where his
Jim Rash.
Thank you. Where his stepdad told him he was a three, and they had that very similar conversation.
Awesome.
Isn't that great? Yeah, that's a great character builder.
Yeah.
So they said, you know, we can maybe write a movie about this.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. They wrote all their drafts. They took it around. And ironically, one of the places was Fox Searchlight.
Mm.
Looked at it, liked it.
Yeah.
They were, you know, hemming and hawing, going back and forth. And ultimately, Fox Searchlight said, nah, we're not going to do it. Then it went to, like, Lionsgate, and Lionsgate took over Mandate, and they didn't feel comfortable there. So then it sort of languished, like a lot of projects in Hollywood.
Yeah, a lot of directors went in and out with this project.
Yeah. And they came across Alexander Payne.
Sure.
Who was a gentleman who directed The Descendants.
They worked
with
them.
And he said, well, I don't want you to direct it. He goes, but could you do it? He goes, I don't want to direct your movie. Mm-hmm. He goes, but I do like your balance of comedy and drama. So why don't you take a crack at The Descendants?
Oh.
So they did. Uh-huh. And next thing you know, they're winning the Academy Award.
Wow.
So that opens up doors for them, which is great. And then it comes time, you know, they were still having, like, you know,
challenges.
A little bit of challenges.
You always do.
And they wanted to get a good cast together. They had in mind who they wanted. Funny thing, I don't know if you know, but like for Steve Carell.
Yeah.
They said, you know, we want Steve. We think this is great. You know, he's always wanted to play against type.
Of course.
So this could be the role for him.
Yeah.
He liked it. And he's like, well, you know, I'm going to be on vacation in Marshville, Massachusetts.
Whoa.
And they're like, we'll come down and film where you're on vacation. And he's like, okay, I'm in.
Oh, wow.
And so they actually went. That, a lot of that movie is filmed in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's great. Allison Janney was a friend. She was on board.
Yeah.
They sent the script apparently to Sam Rockwell, and he just called him up, and he's like, I'm in. And they were like, really? He's like, yeah, I'm in. Yeah, I love this. And
that's great.
So everything came together, and they took it to Sundance.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a great response at Sundance, and then Fox Searchlight circles back.
It's like, hey, guys.
$10 million. $10 million.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, so that's a great Hollywood story, mm-hmm. and it's a great, you know, you can look at it as a coming-of-age story. I mean, it took about 8 years for this project to get to the silver screen, and a lot of change went through. You know, I'm sure these guys went through their rite of passage.
Yeah.
To get this movie done, and they got to direct it on their own, you know.
Which is great. I mean, they came out, the writers from SNL, they wrote for Arrested Development.
They're in the Groundlings.
Movies, Groundlings and everything. So you can see their progression, the trajectory their career is taking and stuff like that. And then they win the Academy Award, you won. And you would think that they would, people would be going, oh, well, what's your next one? What's your next one? But no, they still have difficulty. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Still got to put it together.
Exactly.
You know, and they didn't get distribution until Sunday.
I know, it's crazy.
Yeah. And I think it's great that because so many directors were in and out with this project, they finally decided, well, we're going to do it. We'll just do it ourselves and have this project that we've envisioned
and that they believe in. And, you know, for me, when I was watching it, I felt like clearly this is an semi-autobiographical.
Right.
Is it felt like that. It felt like there was passion behind it, not just, you know, hey, isn't this fun? But it did feel like this is somebody had went through this.
Yeah.
Something similar. And, did you guys get that same feeling?
Oh, yes.
Passion was the word again. It's, you know, we talk about a couple of films this summer.
Yeah, we have.
This is a little bit of a passion project.
Yeah.
But it came through in a way that worked. It wasn't heavy-handed.
Yeah.
And, like, we've all agreed there was something relatable to it that we all had. And I think that's what really makes this movie as a coming-of-age story sort of special. And I think I could put it up there with a Stand By Me kind of a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Or an American Graffiti, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that, you know, because a lot
meatballs.
Of people... Exactly. A lot of people
it
compared it to Meatballs because
Absolutely.
Of the Bill Murray and Sam Rockwell, especially that correlation, stuff like that. And how can you not? Because one's a camp, one's the water world kind of thing or whatever. And
which exists, by the way.
Water Whiz?
Water Whiz.
Is a real place?
It's a real place in Wareham, Massachusetts.
Nice. Wilburn?
Wareham.
Oh, Wareham.
Yeah, Wareham, Massachusetts. Water Whiz. And,
wow.
Yeah, it's great.
In Wareham.
Yeah, I never went there.
So, but you know, the one thing, you know, because a lot of people are talking about Sam, you know, he channels Bill Murray. And I didn't really think he channeled Bill Murray. I mean, it's hard not to make the comparison, but it didn't feel like that to me. I liked them for different reasons, but I thought it was in and of itself its own thing. Did you guys think it was?
Yeah, I didn't think Sam Rockwell played today's Bill Murray's kind of character. I always, in all the roles that I've seen Sam, he usually is the socially awkward but still lovable kind of character that you get to know and enjoy. And so I think Sam really brought his own personality to this character rather than Bill Murray.
One of the things that I was noticing about Sam Rockwell was that, you know, in the beginning where he's sort of testing Duncan and, mm-hmm. you know, and bringing him in, it was more inclusive than sort of the Bill Murray characters and the other things. You know, I was less afraid for Duncan that he was going to get, you know, his pants pulled down in front of everybody because of Owen. So it just, you know, it just felt like a little more of a brotherly relationship.
I like that Sam, and I don't know if it was a specific choice for Sam, because you can see Sam thinking and making the decision like, hey, this, you know, this kid, something here about this kid, and he might need a hand or whatever. And then they actually captured it, because you don't get that in the Meatballs thing. The Meatballs thing, it's very loosely structured. And very
true.
Loosely, yeah.
It is, but, you know, I mean, if you're going to make the comparison to Meatballs, I mean, there is the relationship that Bill Murray takes.
Yeah, there's you can't escape
with him,
it.
And you can't escape that. And, you know, well, let's just say, you know, it doesn't have the way back, I should say.
Right.
It doesn't have, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. But, you know, it didn't, in the end, it just doesn't matter. Right. You got to go your own way.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way Sam Rockwell, you know, he was rattling off his one-liners and, you know, it seemed very improvisational the way that Bill Murray would do it.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have the rubbery face, but you can obviously get the mentorship, you know, aspect of that. And Sam Rockwell, you know, if he's forgotten, come supporting actor time.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm worried about. Because, you know, they often get forgotten because of the summer. But, you know.
He and Allison Janney, I think, you know, are great candidates. Everybody did a great job. But I think those two really stood out for their different reasons. And
what are you going to say, Marissa?
Oh, I completely agree. If those two don't get recognition for their roles, I think they really stepped up. The thing with Sam's character is that he realized that Duncan is the shy guy, and the thing I love about his character, he slowly breaks through his shell, just like welcoming him, making him feel comfortable, and then even exploiting him a little bit and getting him in
a
crowd.
A hazing kind of a deal.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Exactly, and that's what I love, because sometimes you have to do that with wallflower characters. You just have to have a situation where you have to force them out of their shell.
Yeah, you just brought up Wallflower. A lot of people are also thinking about last year. I think it was last year.
Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yeah. So making that comparison. Yeah. Obviously, two completely different movies.
Sure.
But it was almost like the message was just saying, well, this one's funnier, this one's heavier. Yeah. You know, and any thoughts on that comparison?
Well, I want to talk, you know, John, you know, you being a script doctor, and obviously everyone can weigh in, but in terms of the conventions of the genre, right?
Yeah.
So, like, kind of it seems first love.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems to be kind of always, it usually takes place in the summer.
Yeah.
With the exception of, like, American Graffiti, that's just one night. And what I loved about this movie, in terms of kind of perhaps breaking convention, is it takes place over the summer, but there's a lot, if you kind of think about it, beat by beat, happens within just one day.
Right.
You know, towards the end, with the climax, obviously, he has that great date.
Right.
With Susanna, then they come home. Yeah. The stepsister's pissed. The mom's pissed. Then they have the party, and then we have a breakup there. Then he tries to kiss her. That doesn't go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he eventually goes to the party.
Yeah.
So, but that's within a 24-hour period, and yet you know, there's so much.
And
what did you guys think about just the conventions in general?
I liked them. First of all, one of the reasons why you have a genre movie is because there are specific beats. There is a specific structure to it and everything, and they work for a reason. But this was – it did break convention. First of all, it only happens over – well, it's not even a full summer because they're leaving early. So who knows? I mean, it could have been two weeks for all we know.
Yeah.
But it seemed like it was, you know, a month or so.
Yeah, I mean, because they were there just prior to the 4th of July.
Yeah.
And there was another party after the 4th of July that we know of. So,
but I liked the conventions. And one of the reasons why I like them is, you know, without having to nod to them, the audience is comfortable with that structure, that storyline. And so you can really relax and just go with the characters because you don't really have to worry about anything. You're not, you know, trying to figure it out. You're just being in the moment with them, which sometimes is the best thing for the audience to be, rather than be ahead, trying to figure it out, and being behind, whatever.
Yeah, and I liked how there was the difference between Duncan being at home with his family and then Duncan being at the Wiz Park with his friends. And at home, there are more serious emotional beats and more dramatic. And then at the park, there are more fun and comedic beats.
Mm-hmm. Which brings me to, like, I guess I wanted to talk a little bit about the awkwardness.
Sure.
You know, when you're feeling awkwardness and, you know, is giving thought to, like, Duncan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a sense, you know, he wasn't necessarily a bad-looking kid. Mm-hmm. And you can understand why he was shy, because the way I was looking at it, to a point, was he was relegated to being awkward. He was relegated to, he had to sit in the way back. Mm-hmm. He had to sit in that last thing. When they get to the house, you know, he was relegated to going in the beach. He's the only one who has clothes on. He wasn't even given time
Tuscans
to put in
Tuscans.
Right. Tuscans to boot. Yeah. And every step of the way, he was relegated to riding a girl's bike. Mm-hmm. It's not that he wanted to. It was his only option. He was the only one who had to wear and look awkward in a life jacket or a life preserver.
And boy, he looked, I mean, that was a
so
great casting.
Yeah.
The guy looked like a complete awkward geek.
Right.
And the physicality of how he was doing it.
Right.
You know, often walking with his arms straight and his thumbs tucked in, you know, and just
and his hunch over. I swear to God, I want to script this. Just stand straight, please.
His walking posture.
But it just made me wonder, like, okay, how awkward is he? You know, how awkward can he be? Or is it that he's being forced to be pushed aside, made to feel awkward? And it isn't until he gets to the water park that you know, he's able to shed some of that off.
Yeah, to open
and
up.
And then when he, it's when he, when he's told to take the cardboard off. Does that create
but even before that, literally having to take off the tough skin, to you know, the peeling back the onion layers and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, wearing some other clothes because you feel different in other clothes, you can start to become
Different, he doesn't have a history. He walks in there with no history.
They don't know where. Yeah, they have and they don't even ask about his history.
He can invent
himself. He doesn't even talk about his history until way in the late in the movie. He was talking to Sam, Owen, the character.
Yeah,
and he finally says how he talks about his dad and he hates Trent.
Right,
exactly. So they take him as he is and then allow him room to grow into.
Not be that wallflower that he was sort of kind of pushed in, you know, that we he seemed to be pushed into that corner. Like he had to play.
Nobody puts Baby in a corner.
Right, or nobody puts Duncan in a corner. And he, I mean, like he even had to, not that Pete, I loved Pete. Pete was hysterical.
Oh, yeah.
But he was forced to play with Pete.
Yeah,
you know, and one thing I got to play with the lazy eyed kid, and I don't want to pick on anybody with lazy eye, but
he's not even treating him like the 14-year-old he is. No, you have to go play with the younger kid.
I'm
he's not even being given the chance to grow into a man. He's not. Yeah. He's not even not about to.
No,
he doesn't even have. And the role model for the man that he has either his father, who's vacant, gone, absent, or this schmuck.
Yeah, and he's forced
Trent,
instead of like having like, and you could tell that they get along eventually, but. Everybody's just like, you're making me, I have to be forced into friendship now.
Yeah.
It was, you know, what else more can be done? Yeah. So, yeah, I think the water park, I think the dichotomy with being with quote unquote family and being at the park, his different, his surrogate family, he just feels so much more comfortable and better.
Because, again, they allow him to be something.
Right.
And I want to just talk real quick about the first time we see him. When he meets
Duncan?
Joan, is Duncan. When he comes downstairs and he meets Joan and Kip, and they're dancing, and or Joan is grinding on him, so to speak. And you see his dance moves there, and you know, he's so timid and kind of tiny and stuff like that. And then the next time when he's at the water park and he has to take the cardboard, and you could really see him start just right there, as awkward and as gangly as he was, it was hysterical, and you could actually see him being so happy about it. And at the end, especially going, "Yeah, I got the cardboard." And then of course falling on.
And what makes it great is. You know, as awkward as that dance was, nobody around him thought it was awkward.
No, they
everybody was like, way to go, pop and lock.
Even if they thought it was awkward, they allowed it to be awkward. That's okay. You know, what's wrong with not everybody's great dancer? Let him be awkward. That's
way
okay.
Way to go, pop and lock.
Exactly.
You know?
Pop and lock.
Like,
he gets his name.
He
there
gets
you go.
A name.
Earning his bones. It's like, you know, getting the lightsaber for crying out. Pop and lock.
And I think in scene shortly thereafter, he's up on top of the slide. Hold.
Yeah. And
it's great.
With the sunglasses on.
Even those situations forces him to come out of his shell and become the person that he ultimately ends up being.
Right. I thought they did, speaking of the montage, I thought they did a great job. I mean, obviously, by the end of the montage, he's wearing the same shades that Sam Rockwell's wearing at the beginning. I mean, just those little things, I was going, wow, look at that growth. It was good. I thought, you know, because I like montages. A lot of people don't. I like them.
I like them.
I do too.
When they're done well, they're amazing.
Absolutely.
So, and I thought that was a good one for me anyway. It showed his progression. It showed his arc. I mean, I thought it was great. Did you guys enjoy that one?
No, absolutely.
I enjoyed it. It was well done. And even showed his character growth at home because he was winking at his sister. So it just shows that he's becoming like a more comfortable person in his skin anywhere he goes.
Yeah. Sporting a little bit of a tan.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, absolutely.
And he had some money in his pocket.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
He's got some green. That's
it was good. And, like, Phil, you brought up a point, like, when you're talking about location and things like that. I think you had a geography of the place. Mm-hmm. You sort of kind of knew where the house was in relationship to the Water Whiz and him riding the bike over the bridge, and you know, which I always like that in the movie where you get a sense of location.
Oh, yeah, context. And, it really helps. Yeah.
And, and I think that movie had a lot of that, you know, whether you were on the beach or whether at the park or the house, whether he was at the pizza shop playing Pac-Man. Like, you knew every part they passed coming into town, they passed that. And it was, like, really funny, too, noticing that, you know, it's Sam Rockwell's character pulls up behind him.
Behind him.
Oh, yeah, he's in the way, way back.
Just these nice little grace notes.
Nice little...
You know what? Speaking of locations, I do want to say this in terms of it. You know, I think it's Susanna who says, you know, this place is like spring break for adults. You know? And it seems Water Whiz is the only place for kids.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of that. And I thought that was really funny because obviously of what everything implies.
Yeah.
And then it made it really fun afterwards.
Yeah. Water Whiz. What a weird name for a
I know.
I'm just saying, right? Did anybody else think that?
I thought of it. I was going to go there.
Okay, just, it is a water park.
Yeah, it is. I mean, sure, but okay. I wanted to talk more about the characters and some cat. This the acting in it because we didn't really touch on it. We barely talked about Alice and Janney. What an entrance! I mean, this if you want to learn how to do movie entrances, you know, because there's a difference between a stage entrance, you know, when you're working on the stage and a movie entrance. This is a good movie entrance, man. She is on. And she from moment one, she is her character and just. Doesn't stop.
And you can see kind of the, some of that West Wing training.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
like
yeah.
Just continuing,
walking and
continuing,
talking,
and
exactly.
And
the pacing.
And, you know.
Yeah, just full on. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I liked her. She was that alcoholic kind of drunk.
What? Wait.
Boozy dame next door.
Boozy and,
she was drinking?
And her one line, her zingers, yeah. Press my laundry, you know? That was yeah. so funny. And yeah. just, it shows that her character tries to overcompensate. Mm-hmm. And try to convince herself that she's happy, even right. though all these things are happening to her family. She just went through a divorce. Her husband's now out of the closet, yeah. and her daughter won't probably even talk to her. So she's overcompensating for all these serious things that are happening yeah. to her, which was a nice contrast to like the whole situation that was going on.
Yeah, I
crashed your. I invited myself to your boat at a party. Yeah. Deal with it.
Deal with it. How many of us have people like that yeah. in our lives? And I immediately thought of aunts that I know. Not my aunts, but my partners.
Well, here's my, you know, with Alice and Janney, what I love about that character is she's loving. Like,
yeah.
even though she gives her son Pete a yeah. hassle for the eye. Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, that she like she never says anything without a quick hug,
yeah.
kiss, or an "I love you."
Yeah, she's just horribly inept at certain parts of it,
right.
but you know that she loves.
But
the kid.
You know, yeah, and like that's a tough scale because yeah. what she was saying was so not right for a parent to say.
Terrible,
but you buy it in yeah. this sense because at the end of the day, you knew that she loves her son,
and that's, right.
and
yeah.
she loves her daughter as well. She knows that the daughter is going through that frustration,
right.
but she doesn't love the daughter any less. Yeah. And yeah. I think that's a really hard line to straddle that Alice and Janney did perfectly.
And a lot of times it's parents who are coming at their kid to correct them because the parent is embarrassed
right.
and the parent wants mm-hmm. to look better. And right. her character was definitely coming from, I want you to have a better life. I want
right.
people to, you know. And again, it was horribly inappropriate how she was saying it. But, you know,
would you buy it? And then yeah. at the end of the day, it comes off being not so horribly inappropriate.
Right.
Yeah,
you know,
and even though it was inappropriate, you could see Peter, the way he talked to her at the end, granted, that was inappropriate
that
too.
Was
but you could see that, you know, because of who she is, he does have confidence.
He has learned.
Again, he's doing it in a horrible way, but you could see that at least he's not a wallflower,
right.
and at least that he has ownership of himself. And
right.
wants, you know, and the other thing that I thought was great about the characters, at the end, Allison, her Betty, goes over to Pam, and you could see that she really, really has Pam's best interest.
A genuine
in
connection.
Exactly, genuine connection. Look, I really, you know, I love
think
you.
I
think you're great.
Yeah, I think you're great.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, I was going, get away from him. As much as she knows,
yep.
yeah.
You know, Trent.
About
and
his
yeah,
history.
Yeah, it's all, you know, it was, for me, the subtext was, God, I hope you get away from him because
yeah.
you deserve better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You know, it was great. But again, if we look, can we talk about the end for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, if I had... my one little nitpicky thing was, for me anyways, you know, the movie has a lot of heart. We know that. And the way that it ends is fine because there's the reconnect with the mom.
Yeah.
Things are going to be all right. Mm-hmm. They're in the way back.
Mm-hmm. But they're doing,
this story's
together.
Behind them.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting farther away, but mm-hmm. they're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And that's a great way to end it. For me, I was like, God, you know, this kid made his bones at this water park.
Mm-hmm.
He's becoming a young man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would have been great if somehow he was able to stay with Alice and Janney,
yeah.
you know, or if they stuck around so he can continue to work at the water park, at least for that summer, or before leaving, if Owen, like, says, like again, you just do the meatballs thing and
yeah.
say, hey, kid, am I going to see you next summer?
Right.
Absolutely. Like, I would have been like, oh, this kid's going to be awesome. And he's going to, you know, maybe reconnect and take
yeah,
off
think
with
if
that.
It,
but
if this has gotten any criticism, I should say the most criticism this movie has gotten pretty much is the ending. And that a lot of people wanted more there, or they wanted him to stay.
But that's a good thing. That's a good problem to have.
I think there needs to be a little bit of heartbreak in the end. Yeah. Because, you know, at the end of the summer, you don't end up with the romance.
That's true. It always ends. It always ends.
You know, the summer always ends.
And also,
so I think there is some heartbreak
there.
That's
not the arc. Really, the arc is for the mother. For the mother to stop choosing other things over your son who really needs you and stuff. And especially the things you're choosing, they're not helping.
No. Yeah, and it's even the symbolism of the way, way back. You're looking back at your past, but yet you're still moving forward.
Oh, look at that.
Back to the future.
Write that down.
Right down.
Nice. Ooh. Oh, now, the other character that I want to talk about right now is the Toni Collette character. Her character is Pam. And I think, you know, because Allison Janney's character is so big, so broad, and even Joan, to a large degree, is pretty big. But I think she has I thought she did a fabulous job, because that's not an easy character. You have to be pathetic and likable at the same time, or you have to at least want the audience to pull for you to say, come on, wake up,
not be the doormat. Not
exactly. And and without people writing you off and saying, forget it, I can't stand you. And that's a tough, very tough line to walk.
Another one, yeah. And again, I think she carries it off because she has that one line of dialogue that she's talking to Duncan. Mm-hmm. And she's like, Duncan, you don't understand. Sometimes you're so afraid that you don't want to lose what you might, you know. You get exactly where that character is.
How desperate.
Desperate. Mm-hmm. You understand why she made that decision in the movie to take Trent back, so to speak. There's nothing that's false about it. And as Duncan, you can completely understand why he's so pissed off.
Right.
Because it's like, you know, he doesn't understand. And you feel bad for Toni Collette's character.
You do. And it was interesting. You just said that. I mean, and I'm going to steal a line from Perks, Being a Wallflower. It's you accept the love you think you deserve. And that's all she thinks she deserves is Trent. And that's pathetic. But until she sees her son's bravery, or his coming out of his shell, or the possibility of who he could become, she's not strong enough, courageous enough to make a decision or make a better decision for herself. So in a way, it's because of that that allows her that final step to say, you know what, I'm going to do things differently.
Yeah. And you don't hate her.
No.
I like the fact that, you know, she, like Duncan, is in a world where she doesn't know this place. She's never been here.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking about Betty's great entrance. What's great about it is, right off the bat, it makes Pam feel awkward. Because remember, she says to her, like, hey, you're supposed to say that my hair looks nice.
Yeah, she doesn't know anymore.
You know, and so she doesn't understand the rules of this place, and she doesn't know how to behave. And so that really, it makes it, it sets it up for her to grow right off the bat.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's at the end of it, they end up together.
Yeah.
Because they're supposed
and
to
I
grow.
Thought one of the great shots for me, especially towards the end, was when she finally goes in, when Pam finally goes into WaterWiz, and she passes by the employee of the month. Obviously, she doesn't even know he's working there. But more than that, she gets all that information. But it looked like that's the first time she's ever seen her son smile this whole summer.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it was in a picture. Yeah. At the WaterWiz.
And it's the first time she smiled for pride of herself.
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought that was a very effective, nicely done, a lot of show me, don't tell me.
And the great stuff, too, about that scene, because that was a scene that stayed with me for a little bit, because Trent comes walking in and just has the blinders on. He doesn't want to acknowledge that this kid is a 10.
Yeah.
This kid is right staring him in the face as employee of the month.
Yeah.
He doesn't even notice.
Oh.
Looks right through it.
In fact, like, what are we doing here?
It's a great, great scene that says a lot with little to do.
So.
Can we talk about Steve Carell?
Let's do it.
Sure.
Jump in.
So nice to see him not being the nice, awesome dad dude.
Yeah, awkward, funny, cute guy.
Yeah. It was so against character, which, as we've talked, were against type for him, and he did a great job. And it was a little, I came into this movie just knowing I was going to like it. I've seen like one preview. I knew very little about it, but I knew I was going to love it. And I did not know that that was what his character was going to be. And so I was a little, you know, off kilter with but loved it. I thought it was fantastic because he did such a good job with it. And
And again, it could have easily gone into one of those too much
caricatures.
Yeah, caricatures, exactly.
Stereotypical.
And but you know, he pulled it back just enough. Like, you know, you can almost forgive him. He's really not that bad.
No. Well, I wanted to throw that question out to the group at the beginning. Did you see him as being not that bad? Like, you're going, okay, the three comment was dicky, pardon my French, but, you know, as he's going on, I got the sense, anyways, that he sort of kind of wanted to make this work. Yeah. He was going about it the wrong way.
Absolutely.
But he sort of kind of, and then there was that one point of the movie where you're just going, he's a dick.
Yeah.
He's just,
yeah,
absolutely. You know, and.
But he thinks he might have been just doing the tough love thing.
He could have been.
Right, well, the dent in the car thing,
yeah,
that was the like, you know, that you're kind of trying to figure out where he is. And I just thought that was very well crafted, how we, you know, learn more and more about him. How he's revealed.
Yeah, and I liked it at the very beginning, the very first conversation that we have with Steve Carell's character, Trent, that whole grading Duncan as three, you know he was going to be a jerk kind of character. Mm-hmm. And then going throughout the movie, you see him always say these lines, let's try to do this as a family, you know, let's improve ourselves. But it's really, I think it was his security within himself that he's trying to get better, even though he says it in the wrong way to people. But it just shows that he's just kind of insecure and he wants a better family.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, there's one article read the character has a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Which, pardon me, it looked as if, you know, he already had a failed marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a daughter from that marriage. Mm-hmm. And he himself could have been awkward, mm-hmm. too. And, you know, maybe he felt himself a three at some point, but he never really got over that awkward stage. And he knows that in his heart, he might not be that great of a guy. And I think, what is he, he's a car salesman?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe he had bigger aspirations for himself.
Could be.
Yeah, and even the station wagon, he said it was
his cherry.
Yeah, the car that his father used to drive.
Yeah.
So it just shows that maybe he had some father issues as well.
Well, what I liked... you know, right off the bat, I was trying to figure out, okay, you know, with the opening scene, what's the dynamic with the girl in between, right? And we eventually find out that's his daughter.
Right.
And as I'm learning more about her, it's great to see that she is terrible. She comes in the next day and like, oh, they drank all the beer.
Horrid.
You know,
and you're what, 17?
Horrid.
Oh. Exactly. And so, you know, he's, you know, in terms of, because initially I thought, okay, tough love.
Right.
You know, he's really a three, and he keeps telling him to speak up. So it's really kind of, again, mean, but I thought a little bit encouraging at the time.
Yeah, well, it is. Cause, hey, what is it? That Coleman's not going to carry itself and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he is. Yeah, I mean,
he's somewhat encouraging in a weird way. At the time, right? So they're
he's
having
dicky.
Dinner,
yeah.
and he says to him like, "Hey, we pick up our own plates."
Yeah.
I thought that was a good line because, you know, I looked at Duncan, I was like, "Really?" You know, at the very least, like the nerds that I know, they would have done that themselves.
Right,
you know, they would have had like this.
But then, like, the next shot of that was nobody picked up their plates.
Yeah, the adults went off, and Duncan was still picking up the plates.
Yeah. Plates. So, he was just not a good, likable guy.
Adults,
and obviously, he failed as a father with that girl because she was just so...
She was horrid. She was the worst.
Like, was she...
And then her with the other teenage girls. Oh, I just could not...
Oh, my God. Awful.
So superficial. And, like, I just feel bad for teenage girls now.
Yeah.
But, like, I didn't even like teenage girls like that when I was a teenage girl.
One thing I didn't get is why the hell did Susanna even care? Why did she want to hang with them? What was the...
With the other girl?
With the other girl.
I mean,
because
I'm
you
only
have to hang
guessing...
With packs? What?
I feel like maybe her mom wanted her to hang out with other friends, too.
And maybe it wasn't all that bad. I mean, the way I looked at it, with the exception of Duncan and his mom... This has been the summer home for years and years and years. This is who you hung out with.
Right.
This is all you had.
It's always been done.
This is the way it's always been done. As they were getting older, you know, she was realizing, geez, these girls are just useless. Like, what are we doing?
And they were horrid. They were great, though. I mean, they did a good job because I just wanted to smack them.
And I would say
each and every one of them.
Accurate, too.
Each and every
one. What did you guys think of the, you know, speaking of horrible fathers, what do you guys think of Chad? Because he didn't even know about that breakup aspect of it. Remember, we got one shot of Chad playing football. Like, whoa,
I'm
playing football.
I'm playing football,
I'm playing football here. We talked about this. I'm tossing.
I'm a little tossing.
I was waiting for Chad to come back, and he never did. I was like,
okay,
all right. Poor Chad.
They did break up, though.
They did break up.
Good riddance.
Nice, so.
Yeah.
All right, so we haven't talked about Joan or Kip yet. Rob Corddry and Amanda Pete.
I was expecting more from Rob Corddry because everything I've seen him in, he's very comedic, and he's always the fun guy that you love to watch, but I felt like he took his back seat with this kind of character, and maybe there was more to his character that he could have brought to the table as a more comedic elements to relationships.
And he, again, but just like Steve really took the role against type, maybe he wanted to do something quieter and different.
More
just
more serious. So I was kind of expecting just more from him. I mean, he wasn't bad. It's just I wanted to see more from
him.
You know, what I got from Kip anyways was he's in a relationship with a very heavy personality woman, mm-hmm. Amanda Peet. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, he's the guy that would roll with it and be, hey, all right, come on, let's go out and have a good time.
Yeah.
Pardon me. And, I mean, I didn't mind that Rob Carter didn't take that role to be, you know, I need to be the comedic foil here. I think it made the relationship better. What I'm the most curious about is that, okay, so we have that one party after the 4th of July where everything just goes to hell.
Yeah.
Okay, so everything's brought to light. What happens to that relationship?
When Duncan is confronting his mother and Terrence at the same time.
Basically...
And Kip steps in. Kip steps in.
Because
Trent goes for Duncan. Like, he's going to hit him. Nice job, Kip. Way to go. Because honestly, I think Kip's character was, I just want to drink and smoke and have a good time. That's what my summers are about. All this other stuff, I don't care. Yeah. I don't even care about
But now this comes
affair.
To light. Yeah. But I think he did. I mean, at the end, I mean, because there was a look on his face where he's like, okay, what's going on? And then they cut to Amanda Peet, and she's just like...
Drinking or drinking.
Wait, what happened over here? And nothing to see here, but I'd be curious to see. Well, you know, I was thinking about, geez, what happened to that? You know, summers ain't going to be the same over there. Yeah. You know, it's going to end a lot sooner.
All right, now let's touch on Susanna. I think she did a great job.
Fantastic.
She reminded me of Amanda Seyfried.
Oh, yeah,
a
of course,
bit,
the
like
look.
A young kind of.
Anna Sophia Robb. Yeah, but, you know, because she was, you know, obviously the ingenue and everything like that. You can see all that. But, you know, she looked nice and, you know, and you in the beginning I thought, oh, God, is she just going to
be another
a mean
one of those
girl
bitchy
too?
Girls.
Really? You know? Okay, so we had some concurrence there with that. What were you saying?
I liked her. She was kind of in the same boat with Duncan. A bit of an outcast, doesn't really get along with friends, has issues towards her parents. So, but I thought she was nice, nice to watch, and nice foil for Duncan.
It was interesting to see.
Help. And she even at the beginning, more so in the beginning of the movie, she tried to get Duncan kind of to speak.
Yeah.
Engage
him.
That's what I thought was, speaking of defying convention, she was kind of pursuing him a little bit, or at least trying to, you know, engage with him and bring him out and everything like that.
Exactly.
That was great.
She was looking for something more.
Yeah.
You know, she knew her friends were, you know, a waste.
Yeah.
Here's this new kid, and he seems to have a bit of a personality, sort of. There's something in there.
Yeah.
I just love it when, you know, she says, where do you go? And he's like, well, she goes, that's okay. You know, keep that for yourself.
Yeah.
And then she stalks him. And she ends up in Waterwiz, and he's like, what happened to keep it to yourself?
Her.
She's like, nah, I wanted to see what you're... And that whole day at the park with the two of them, I mean, that was a great scene.
I thought their whole relationship was...
Yeah, I thought it was nurtured.
Really genuine and awkward and comfortable, and you're just going... watching it. Yeah, I remember junior high and high school. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And right up to when that scene at the beach where... I mean, he just had... It was right after the party. He just had this big blowout. You know, how can you feel any worse?
Yeah.
The girl comes to sit next to you and... awkwardly he goes to kiss her and she's like, whoa, and he's like, son of a bitch. He's like, can this get any worse?
Worst
he goes, I'm going ever.
Exactly.
You know, but it's explained.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
I mean, when they meet up later, she's like, look, it was just, you caught me off guard.
Yeah.
And then she plants that kiss on him.
Ooh.
And you're like,
ooh.
Yep. Exactly. And it works. You know, you need to have that work. You know, it needs to work. Again, it just plays to the heart. And it does it without pulling the strings too much and making it obvious. It's very, it's subtle.
So we all think of Liam. I thought this guy hit it right on. He played it so well. I mean, I don't know how awkward he is in real life, but the physicality, the uncomfortableness, I mean, I just, there you go. There's adolescence right there.
Personified.
Exactly.
He was excellent. We didn't talk that much about Sam Rockwell.
Well, I wanted to talk to him last, though, because I wanted to talk, if there's anything else we wanted to say about Liam, and then I wanted to move on to Sam.
Well, what I like in terms of his portrayal, he didn't get the humor. And I think... I think
that was so funny.
I think, you know, unless I'm mistaken, you know, I myself was an awkward kid, and you try jokes as a male until you define your group of friends based on your jokes. If they get them, they get them. If they don't, you're like, well, they suck anyway. And so it's interesting to see that Owen is really his role model for that type of humor, you know, and he just doesn't get anything.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, you're having way too much fun. You got to get out of here.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
But it was also interesting, even when he tried to be Owen, and when he was first walking Susanna around and doing the same spiel, he still, I ain't got the pacing right.
But you know what's great about that scene? Yeah. She laughs, and he goes, you got that a hell of a lot sooner than I did.
So, but then right now, he doesn't even have to be Owen, because he's got his own way of being, and that was fine and stuff like that. So,
and you know, he also takes from, you know, there's the great scene at the top of the water slide.
Hold.
You know, I think it's the water slides down. It's back up again.
Yeah.
Hold, and then not too long after, you know, there's Duncan with the sunglasses on. Hold,
doing the same bit,
and they're looking at him.
There you go.
And of course, there's the fantastic scene where Anna Sophia's character, she shows up at Water Whiz,
right,
and he's talking to her, and then you've got Sam Rockwell and his buddy.
Oh, my God,
like going, who's
with the PA system?
Yeah, with the PA system.
Wow.
Come over here. We need to talk to you, please.
To the international
and so he comes over. It's like, why aren't you talking to that girl? He goes, well, if you didn't call me over
here.
But, I mean, and, you know, everybody in the audience is just going, cringing, because every one of us has had an embarrassing moment like that in our lives. It's like, oh, God,
Go get your cougar.
Jesus.
You know, I mean, but that scene's great.
Yeah,
You know, and again, you're right. It could have gone way over the top.
Yeah. No, it was definitely handled. Every time it went to, they're off to something
else.
But
I like that scene, because it shows that Duncan was okay with people trying to make him, you know, be more social and help him out in that way.
Yeah. Well, going back to when he earns his name, Lock and Pop, Caitlin is very
Pop and Lock.
Pop and Lock. What did I say?
Box Top.
Box Top.
I don't know.
That's right.
It's right at the point where, you know, Caitlin's pretty much fed up with Owen's character.
Yeah.
And she turns to him and she says, you got lucky on this one.
Yeah.
Has he kind of been lucky just because Duncan is Duncan and that he's always going to turn out okay no matter what?
What I took from that is there are many times when Owen has done similar things like that and it hasn't turned out so well.
It's gone. The plan's gone south.
And that could speak to Duncan, but more than anything, for me, it spoke to Owen.
Yeah.
But I think it's also the environment. They're in a family-friendly environment, so I don't think people are going to be yelling at him in a negative way. People are going to be encouraging him and having actual fun.
Yeah, that was the other thing. It seemed like, except for our Vladimir and Ming Ling and the other guy, most everybody there just wanted to enjoy their time instead of being so critical, as opposed to the mean girls being ridiculously crazy and cruel.
Yeah.
So even though he's horrible at the dance, they're just so thrilled that he gave it a shot.
But nobody cared.
Yeah, no.
In fact, they go, hey, okay, now you're going to spin in your head. And they all help him.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, that's the support that kid has been looking for.
And has needed.
And he wanted. And then when he was done, they said, okay, Pop and Lock, go take your cardboard away.
Who hasn't wanted that, man? God, it would be great. Does somebody show me how to do help me out and then applaud me when I'm done?
Yeah.
And then, of course, I'll fall flat.
And give him a moniker, too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that also goes with Sam Rockwell's character. His character gave Duncan the intention that he needed. Mm-hmm. Which helped him grow as a person.
Yeah, from the Pac-Man from the beginning. Of course, you saw him in the car, but the Pac-Man when he says, you know, choose your own path. I mean, just these little subtextual lines in there was great.
Yeah.
And, you know, really laid out the trajectory for those characters. And I thought that was wonderful.
And even though there was a pattern, he still lost.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he still lost.
Mm-hmm.
But following pattern.
And we even got to see Owen have a little bit of an arc.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of an arc, you know?
Well, I think the cliche is true, you know, that sometimes the teacher does end up learning.
Sure.
And, you know, the fact that at the end, you know, Owen gets to put his head on Caitlin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who, when you first kind of really meet them, like, he has his is he even wearing pants?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell.
I didn't really have that. That was very great placement of a
railing.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. No, but, and I think it, Where was my point going with Owen? Yeah, I mean, definitely he does have a pattern, mm-hmm. Especially when he shows up. He even takes ownership of him screwing up, mm-hmm. you know, you know, with the kids getting stuck in the slide, mm-hmm. you know, Maya Rudolph gets really upset at him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, hey, I'm sorry. And he's like, no, kid. He goes, that one was all me.
Yeah.
And the next day when he shows up and he's pulling the chairs out, mm-hmm. and they're like, what are you doing here? And he's like, well, I think I'm working and stuff. And then before Duncan walks off, he goes, you know they go in rows, don't you?
Yeah.
It's a great, again,
10-step process. Yep. I know
the
that.
Student has become the master. Mm-hmm.
I think what's great about it for me is the fact of what you know it, when he's playing Pac-Man, he says it's my personal best. I didn't say it's the best.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's a metaphor for Owen's life. In absolutely, general. He's but, his personal.
But
best.
But Duncan's as well, because we can go back to the dancing. He's not a good dancer, but that may have been his best. The fact that he was willing to give it a shot.
Hey, he's better than me.
Well, okay, there you go. That says something. So I just I enjoyed that, you know, because it is. Who cares? It's give you the best of you to the world, regardless of what that is.
And again, I think that's you know, between Owen, Duncan, and Pete.
Yeah.
Pete is awkward because of his physical handicap, his lazy eye, but he lives with it and he doesn't give a crap.
Yeah.
What people say, and if people are trying to condescend or be nice to him, he just throws. He tells Owen. Owen's like, "Oh my god, I wish I had an eye like that." He goes, "You're full of shit." Like he just looks right at him. And
well,
he's
no, he
like,
doesn't.
No,
no he doesn't. One eye looks at him.
Yeah,
the other eye.
Yeah, yeah. And but it's just great that he has the confidence to say no. He goes, he goes, "No, kid, really." He goes, I'm going to go socialize and I'll circle back. And he goes off on his own and he does his little dance. He's great.
What do we think of the Three Stooges, by the way? Ming Ling and Vladimir. I mean, come on. The Three Stooges. I mean, they reminded me of Sandlot. Every time they comes out, these guys just reminded me of Sandlot. I couldn't get that out of my head when I was watching these guys. And a little bit of Caddyshack and Meatballs, but mostly Sandlot.
What I liked about them was they were a nice barometer.
Yeah,
for where you know Duncan was ultimately in his life because he's like, okay, I'm not them. No, because okay, if you look at it, they're literally a three.
Yeah,
You know, and so
that's right. Nice.
That's right. Good one, Phil.
Yeah. On.
And the thing about those three kids is that there was that situation when they got stuck in the slide where Duncan had to get people to help him. So it made Duncan feel that power of authority over even these kids.
Yeah. And help them grow.
Yeah.
You know, and I think...
And they got stuck in the thing.
Yeah.
And he passes somebody in the thing.
Successfully completed
the
task.
So there you go. You get to see your nice arc. So, all right. So let's move on to direction, because this, obviously we mentioned before Nat Faxon and Jim Rash, directorial debut. What do we think? Thoughts?
One of the things that I think we should talk about is just the pacing, because we talked about that a little bit. It very much harkened back to The Descendants, and you and I agree a lot on pacing, that, you know, it's important to set a tone, and I think they did just a great job with this. You felt like you were kind of in a lazy summer. You were hanging out for the summer with these people, but you know, I never felt bored.
No.
And I love, and that's all direction. That is all direction, the setting of the pace.
And a little bit of editing, that's in concert
with
direction.
Yeah, they knew when to cut. They knew
Tatiana. Regal, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. Yeah, and that music was wonderful too. Because I mean, I thought. By the way, let's stand directing in a little bit. But it's their debut, so it's not easy to get that. You know, first of all, and granted, they didn't pick a huge story. I mean, this doesn't have a grand scope or anything like that. But because it's not a huge story, and you don't get to rely on special effects and everything like that, it really is that you got to have great story, good direction, and great acting. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the story just falls flat. You don't have any of if you don't have one of those, forget it. You can't rely on special effects.
And because Nat and Jim are actors themselves, they have mentioned in interviews that they let the actors kind of go off book a little bit because a lot of the cast members have improv backgrounds, so they let the atmosphere of the movie get a little bit relaxed and have the actors take over, because it is more character driven movie rather than story,
because it really did feel like a summer thing where you're hanging out in the houses and you know, and the parents
just drunk all the time. No, I have no idea what that's like.
Exactly.
What I loved about the direction was is basically, and I brought this up earlier, was had there not been any certain kind of references,
yeah,
I mean, time period.
Right.
They kept it timeless.
You Yeah, they kept it.
They tried as much as they could. That's for sure. Yeah,
but it was really, you know, if they didn't make like if they didn't make a cougar reference or anything, we wouldn't necessarily know that it was modern day because I mean it, there was that water park is stuck in the 80s.
It was.
They had 80s music playing throughout.
That was great that they talked to it and spoke to it just so they could get it done with. I thought that was wonderful.
It was an 80s movie without it being in the 80s, and it did it. Transports you to
but also
to a different time.
Because it was an 80s place and because they were using 80s music, I thought it was great because it also created this nostalgia in the movie for the characters. It's like, oh, this is it's a throwback. So,
absolutely.
Which allows us to go back to our own nostalgia.
But it's not a throwback. Like, it's weird because it's current, it's modern day. But I think because of their direction and because they wrote it together, I think that it was personal and they accomplished, again, a lot doing so little.
And I love the little moment when Owen is on the top of the deck and he's talking down to everybody about the I Need a Hero.
Loose reference. How about the remake? Anybody? Awesome.
Well,
and did you notice that Susanna was wearing the T-shirt that had the Stones logo on it?
No, but you did. Yeah. Nicely done, Tamara. Mm-hmm.
And then even with the tone of the movie, because it's so 80s, the directors, Nat and Jim, they mentioned like it's kind of like an ode to John Hughes films and a lot of the coming of age films.
Absolutely.
Well,
what
I liked best about it, you know, I what's interesting to me in terms of the editing, it felt like a 2-hour movie, but obviously it was an hour and a half, and I mean that in the good way.
Meaning that it was full and rich and layered, and that you did
exactly. And the interesting part about it to me was, you know, as I'm sitting there with the full audience, there's moments that everyone's just laughing for extended periods of time, but it's moving so fast, so I don't think they were expecting that much of a reaction in terms of the comedy.
Yeah.
Because they really did it well, and, you know, I think it stems that they, them as kind of actors, you know, and being these kind of, again, this is kind of their first project, but I think they knew the characters so well that everything that they did stemmed from that. So even, you know, they're on the boat, and, you know, of course it makes sense to put Duncan in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have the two girls in the front of the boat and everybody in the back, and so he's literally isolated from both.
Absolutely.
You know, and so, but so in terms of that, cinematography came out natural, you know, because they knew how to place characters and the ways the direction would go in terms of staging them. Mm-hmm. So I thought
the life preserver, just a quick note, I'm sorry, I go right back to you, just that he had to wear the life preserver, first of all, it was all pathetic, and even I remember Tamara's like, oh my God.
I know.
But just the fact
again,
that he's wearing the life preserver.
Again, relegated to awkwardness.
And I just thought the metaphor, if you go deeper on it, just that he's going to die here.
Yeah.
Because he's so lame.
Exactly.
He can literally drown.
And then he wants to die in some regard, you know, and thank God.
He just wants to jump off that boat so bad.
And the fact that the life preserver was bright red really made him stand out amongst everyone else. But going back to the cinematography, you can see even at the water park there was a lot of handheld footage going down the water slide. So you can get that difference between having real fun in your in the moment, having fun with the audience, then going back to the beach house where there's really just static cameras and there's really no emotion there.
Yeah, and the cinematographer, John Bailey, who did Country Strong, he's not that into you, the producer, so he's done, you know, obviously big movies. And, you know, clearly they didn't have a huge budget, so they didn't have huge, you know,
gym shots.
Exactly, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, certainly in this kind of movie, you don't need it.
No.
But, it was certainly serviceable. You never got in the way. And, you know, they had some nice moments. The starbursts and the fireworks and things like that, and just composition, I should say, was done well. I mean, for me it worked.
No, absolutely. And I think when you talk about the water park being an article that I had read, being that the water park is a real park, they were able to utilize the people the crowd of the park.
Yeah.
I don't
have any idea how big the park is, but I, you know, they made it feel a lot bigger than I suspect it is.
Yeah.
So that was good.
And another little side note about the water park, because it was such a real place that they actually opened it up at night so the cast and crew members could have fun at night.
Yeah. Oh, nice. That's very fun. Thank God.
Yeah.
There you go. So congratulations on the cinematography. That felt nice to me. I also thought the music, I kind of talked on it, but their choice of music, because a lot of songs I just not aware of. I hadn't never heard of them.
Carry a Laser.
Well, Carry a Laser. Had heard that one. Carry a Laser. Wow.
Well, I think what's great about it is everything stemmed from, you know, there's the first person perspective in a book,
yeah,
you know, or third person. This
right.
is very much first person in terms of everything, right? Mm-hmm. So just from the opening moments, you know, we see Steve Carell's eyes. We don't really see Steve Carell at all.
See, yeah.
You know, and so everything comes stems from there, even the music and you know, REO Speedwagon, as she notes. You know, so what, you just decide to rock out to it?
Yeah.
So it's great that everything was kind of from there.
Yeah.
And went outward.
Yeah, but, you know, because a lot of times in these coming of age, you will really have a heavy-handed soundtrack.
Sure.
Of every popular song or anything, you know, Walking on Sunshine, whatever those are, you know, that happen. And this one didn't have that.
No.
I mean, it had the nice moments for ones that you had known, but then the other ones were much more eclectic in style, if you ask me. Did you guys agree with that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, there were very few directors, and John Hughes, I think, was the master.
Wow.
He was able to use soundtrack to effect.
Yeah.
So, you know, in this movie, I think the soundtrack was subtle because outside of Kira and Carry a Laser and... I Can't Fight This Feeling. I'm trying to point to other 80s songs that I may have heard.
The only other reference I know of is I'm Out for a Hero.
I'm Out for a Hero. Yeah. So it didn't overdo it, but there was enough, again, where it set the tone almost the time.
Yeah.
And you did feel like you were way, way back.
Yeah.
The nostalgia part, I think, really does play to the heart.
But it never dipped into sentimentality.
No.
Like, syrupy or anything like that.
No, not at all. It never felt forced. And the kids, I think, you know, you got to hand it to the kids because sometimes they can be over-directed.
Oh, yeah.
And it could be heavy-handed. Yeah. And, you know, again, when you look at the performances, we go back. Sam Rockwell, I think, is a, you know... He could have stolen the movie, that character, because he was so alive.
Yeah.
He could have chewed the scenery, spit it back out, but the way in which he does it, he's in line with the movie. He doesn't overshadow his cast. He doesn't step on his cast.
And
he does a really great job, and he's believable.
And a lot of credit to the director and the editor
on
that, but also to the other actors who really, you know, they
stepped
even
up.
Though they weren't on screen for a lot of time, I mean, like, let's face it, I mean, Allison Janney, she was not on screen that much, but certainly made a presence, and every time you hear her, even when you hear her in the background, you know, she was just there, so I think that allowed that nice balance.
Yeah, and even Maya Rudolph, who plays Caitlin, she didn't get a lot of screen time either, and she's mostly known for comedic characters that are kind of over the top, but even she kept Owen in check every time you saw her. Mm-hmm. So she was a nice foil to the Owen.
And, and that's what
character.
I think really kind of speaks to what you were saying about this movie having heart, as opposed to being like a wacky comedy with heart. It's really, you know, a coming-of-age film with heart that has some comedy in it.
Yeah, I think
that's what I would prefer for
I think you're right.
And real people, though. When you look at Maya Rudolph's character, I was only supposed to be here for a year. I didn't expect to be here, and I'm here because of you. And I'm just hoping that I didn't mess up my life by doing this. It makes her a real person. Yeah. And it hits Sam Rockwell, who's a real person, because Duncan even tells Sam Rockwell, I want to be here forever. And he's like, no you don't, kid.
He goes,
you're painting houses in the winter, and then you're bar back and it's some, you know, stinky
dive.
Bar. You get, from that line of dialogue, you get that Sam Rockwell is like, I didn't plan this for my life either, but at least he and Maya Rudolph's character, they do at the end have each other. So owning that park, running that park, that is their life, and they're content, but they want so much more for Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
Even Maya Rudolph, hey, we're going to miss you.
Yeah.
You know, that was a great
thing. But get out.
Yeah. We'll miss you, Duncan.
I liked, again, going back to the elements of kind of, you know, the whole location. Everything's used perfectly, right? So when every time it rains, they use that to its fullest effect.
Yeah,
down to Candyland.
Yeah,
which is a great scene in the film of like, it's Candyland. You know,
and you know, coming from the East Coast, and again, either spending a summer down at Cape Cod or going to New Hampshire, when it rained, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot more that you can do other than go to the movies.
Yeah.
So when he had the paper out and going, are we going to go? We can go to the 1 o'clock or we can go to the 3 o'clock. I was like, yeah, that's exactly what you do when it rains, because there's really not a whole hell of a lot to do. And, you know, staying sticklerish to Candyland, that was a great scene. That was a really, really
good
scene.
But I liked how the family, they weren't really like, now nowadays that everyone's so technology involved, and you don't really see cameras or cell phones or computers, you know, in this movie. It's really like the old-fashioned, what families used to do when there was nothing. Right. They'd go out and spend time with each other outside or go... You know, go to
I
movies.
Also think that technology was a specific choice just so they could not be dated, so that this movie might have a longevity to it.
Exactly.
I think that's why they did the music. I think that's why they, you know, they.
So Anna Sophia Robb had a cell phone.
Yeah.
But
so
it
did
was
Duncan.
Never used,
he was listening to it.
It was never used as a plot device.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was never,
you didn't see a lot of people just on, because, you know,
there were
a lot of people texting, and but you didn't see a lot.
They were actually having conversation with one another, which was, you know, to your point, I found that very refreshing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and in a sense with Anna Sophia Robb, and when she sees Duncan ride off in the morning, and when he comes back, she was still wait there. She goes, "Yeah, I'm waiting for my dad to call." It's like, "Are you waiting outside with the cell phone like all day?" You know? Can we talk about? I mean, some of the dialogue that I think we quoted.
Go ahead.
I mean,
you
know, like, my favorite. Yeah, I read a book about. Yeah. You know, like some of the lines that he had were fantastic.
Yeah, do you think? I mean, because you can see some of Rockwell's bits. They're gonna, you know, I don't know if they'll be meatball bits or Caddyshack bits or anything like that.
But be careful with the car. It's the right amount of shitty right now.
Exactly. So, well, let's get into that. How do you think this rates with other coming of age summer movies and things like that? Where do you think it fills in?
Ladies first.
I mean, I think it's fantastic. I think, you know, we've talked about the timelessness of it, and I think it really kind of captures the magic of summer. You know, because there is something about that, about getting sand on you and having a sunburn and being sweaty and being bored. And there's this magical thing that happens. I spent every summer of my life, you know, lifeguarding or, you know, being by a pool. And there were so many things that were just, you know, as I said in the beginning, so relatable. And I think that that's what really encapsulates it and makes this that coming of age movie that captures the magic of summer.
I agree, because again, going back to relatable, I used to go be in the way, way back of our Chevrolet Suburban, going on road trips to the lake and having that family time, because when it rained, we played family games together. Yeah. So, like, I understood that. I honestly haven't seen Meatballs, so I can't really compare to that movie, but I have seen a lot of John Hughes coming age films, and I would put it right up with all those movies.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, you know, I just say, Robin Wilkins. You know, my summertime crush.
Oh, well.
You know, up at Exeter, New Hampshire.
And, you know, it brought that back.
Yeah. So, no, but it's just like, it brought all that back in this great way, and when you compare it to a coming of age, when you compare it to a coming of age movie, you know, you do have Meatballs, which is ultimately a coming of age movie that has heart. But I got to compare it to things like Stand By Me, which is one of the all-time ultimate coming of age movies out there that just works. You know, of course, some of the John Cusack movies that work. The Sure Thing, One Crazy Summer, Better Off Dead, you know, those movies. And then, of course, you know, you have the John Hughes movies. You know, those movies just, like, got it. You know, I'll point to even, like, last year, Moonrise Kingdom, which is a, you know, they're a bit younger, but they're still coming into their own, and that movie worked really well. And then a coming-of-age story for, say, adults or you know, young adults. You know, I mentioned that movie Safety Not Guaranteed, which works really well. Every movie I mentioned, you know, has that one key thing, and they have heart, a really good story.
Yeah.
You care about the people regardless of their awkwardness. You know, so I think this movie is timeless. I think it stands up there with a lot of them. The Sandlot is a great coming of age movie. I'll even go back to the Bad News Bears in a sense. But you know, I think that what I can't wait for is the Blu-ray. I want the commentary.
I want the behind the scenes
and
because I want to know, like, Jim. Well, actually, what really happened to me, and then you see how it actually what the real story was, and then how he turned that into.
Yeah, it brings you back, and I think a good movie like that, a good coming of age movie. Like, that's what it needs. It should have that heart and make you think about maybe when you were coming of age in a way.
Phil?
you know, I saw kind of snippets of interviews on the red carpet, mm-hmm. and everyone that was there, all the actors said, you know, this is a great instructional manual. They wish they kind of had this growing up. mm-hmm. And I think that's great, but what saddens me is, you know, we're talking about the movie, and ironically, I think we're more of the age demo than really what was intended, and uh-huh. that's the sad part when I listen to kids nowadays.
Right,
they don't know this genre. They don't understand it. And, you know, kind of Oscar time, it's going to be kind of for us, and the Blu-ray is going to be for us, whereas, again, it's really sad that, you know, this genre is becoming sort of extinct.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's more of a nostalgia thing for us, of like, oh, exactly. like in our childhood.
Oh, man, yeah.
Versus, you know, being something of like an instrument.
Nobody goes to the summers anymore.
No one goes away anymore.
That goes back to technology, having that disconnect between family and being social. Rather than being more in tune with everything else that's going on.
But do you think they'd be able to relate to the, for lack of a better term, broken families?
Well, but you know what, though? The other thing, you know, I mean, Phil, you bring up a great point, because today the coming-of-age story goes back to the young adult novel, which all of them are set in, like, a dystopian future.
Right.
I mean, so you've got Twilight as your coming-of-age. Mm-hmm. When we were growing up, mm-hmm. you know, what made the John Hughes movies work was there was something that was relatable.
And then simplicity of that.
Simplicity, exactly.
There's an innocence and an angst, but there's not, you know, dystopia.
And it didn't, there wasn't dystopia. Yeah. And it didn't matter if I was watching 16 Candles mm-hmm. and seeing Molly Ringwald go through, you know, her rites of passage, you still connected. Mm-hmm. And today, unfortunately, it seems as if the coming-of-age story is a limited-release movie mm-hmm. and not a wide-release movie like the John Hughes movies were, even to an extent. Ferris Bueller is a coming-of-age story.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he learns Weird Science is I mean, they're all wide-release movies that we got,
right.
That we could relate to. And I think you bring up a point, perhaps the younger generation, they don't understand that genre as much as they should.
I'm going to bring another one into the mix, because although I agree with everybody in the associations we're making to other films, one of the things that I think they did so well is because they didn't put it in a specific time, and because they didn't really use specific technological things, it can have legs. I mean, each year you could see this and still remember, still have nostalgia. I liken it to Christmas Story in the sense that you could see that every year and still enjoy that.
Absolutely.
And that's set in the 50s. And so, but this one, what I like about it, it's not really set in a specific era, but you could still see it every year and go, that's the summer.
Now, but would you recommend it to, you know, your teenage nephews or your young adult?
I would, actually. I would say, go see it. I mean, because I think there's enough there with, because every teenagers are going, they have similar things that they go through. I mean, that's what these kids are going, even though, you know, it's a difference, you know, there's no dystopia or whatever, but we all went through that experience.
All teenagers always have that point in their lives where they can't speak to their parents or they get on their nerves or and they're stuck in that part of life where they don't know how to express themselves properly and how to address situations. And that even goes back to Toni Collette's character, the mother,
Pam,
thank you. That she doesn't really speak up for herself, therefore teaching Duncan not to speak up for himself in serious situations.
Mm-hmm. Phil, you said that when you watched the movie, you were around some 15-year-old.
What was
your sense like? Were they enjoying the movie for, you know, or did they seem bored?
The father was enjoying the movie.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And the two girls, one of them was texting. One of them kind of got it, I feel.
Is that because she was watching a movie with her father?
Good question, actually.
If he likes it, I can't like it.
Right.
Yeah.
Perhaps. I mean, here's the thing. There were so many old people there. Like, I think I literally heard, like, grandmother laughing.
There was a grandmother laughing near me. She had to be in her 70s. I was like, okay.
I was the youngest person in my audience, and I looked around. I was like, I am the only 20-something-year-old here. It's really sad.
Yeah, it's interesting, then, who the marketing is truly reaching out to.
Yeah.
And it just further, I think, accentuates your point to the coming-of-age story. Listen, I mean, I don't know about you. I was brought up learning about coming-of-age stories in high school, in college, in humanities classes, philosophy classes, and film classes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just brought up watching a lot of those movies. I mean, probably the first one that I can remember was American Graffiti.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, at the time I may not have known that it was a coming-of-age story, but the more, you know, the more you watch that movie, you appreciate it. Absolutely, it's a coming-of-age story.
I'm going to say that the J.D. Salinger documentary is coming out.
Yes.
You know, in terms of – I'm going to be really interested to see, you know, so I think in terms of the discussion we're having
– Yeah.
I think this is a nice kind of segue into that movie because obviously with Catcher in the Rye, so many people say, you know, that's the epitome of a coming age story. Like that's what they related to most. And then, you know, three different killers or assassins said, you know, I related to that story. That's when JD was like, all right, enough.
Wait a minute. Okay, real quick. We're going to go through some, just a quick favorite moment or maybe not so favorite moment, but one, mine for me was when, Duncan had come home, and that's when Trent was trying to, you know, appease Pam, saying, look, it didn't mean anything. I'm sorry, all that other stuff. And he's listening from the hallway, and or the steps, I should say, and you see the poster on the wall. And do you remember what it said on the poster? It says the line exactly what it is, but something about any man can change his path or the world, and every man should try. I mean, just those little grace notes again there and stuff. And then the way they edited the next one, he goes upstairs, the light changes, he comes right back down, and it's the next morning. I thought that's you know, that's a fun little time change and shift and stuff. Anyway, for me, that was a nice little standout. Anything for you guys?
I'd have to say my favorite scene is when he's at that 4th of July party, and he's finally standing up for himself and speaking up for his mother, because that shows that, like, he has really grown as a character, and that's what we've been rooting for as an audience the whole time. We want to see him come out of his shell and say what is on his mind, and that was, like, the turning point. I was like, okay, he really has grown, and, like, I really like this character. He's relatable. He has grown.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to bring out a particular scene, but I want to say that I think I loved, like you were saying, the grace notes and the details, and I loved kind of the whole production design that because it was so evocative. Mm-hmm. You know, they come into this home that is stuck in the 70s, you know, and the water park is in
so
the 80s, and you know, there was kind of the freedom of the beach, and there were, and the, you know, the car and the lack of technology. I think there was so much thought put into every element that brought together the whole. That's, I think, my favorite element of the film.
Even the convertible was a Cavalier from and even the bike he was riding was, you know, not a current
Schwinn
bike.
Schwinn from the 50s.
The
banana seat.
With the streamers and everything.
That's great.
You know, I had a lot of favorite scenes in this movie. I think the one, you know, one of them for me was the scene where Sam Rockwell, where Owen said, Duncan, go take care of those kids. And when he danced, I mean, that was the first time we see him being him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He wasn't like necessarily, he was like, okay, at first it was forced, but then he's like, he was shedding his skin and he was starting to grow. And to me, that was like, that was the start of like him starting to be his own. And the montage, I agree with you, the montage really worked because it really did tell a story. And you know, from the introduction to Sam Rockwell's character, what was her name, Jane, you know, coming on, you know, the movie has so many great scenes to point to. You know, it is hard for me, but I think I would go with the dancing scene, the party. Oh, we didn't talk about those two characters much. We didn't talk about Nat Faxon and Jim Rush.
That's true.
You know, I mean,
good for them for putting themselves in their movie. I wonder how that audition process went.
But again, it was like, you know, you had that one character who was like, I just got to get out of here. Like, you know, he's
Jim
like,
Rice.
Don't, and he's like, don't,
poor,
you know,
pathetic soul.
And when they have the party for him to go, don't get water in my face. I mean, that party was.
The hair and the mustache was in the glasses.
The Dahmer glasses.
You know, but they were characters. You know, you had one guy who was like the lonely.
What an interesting pairing those guys are.
And they work. And so that's why, you know, I love the party scene at the end. And it really made Duncan grow
feel
up.
Feel like he had to go outside his family to find a family.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, and how much how many of us have to do that?
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Phil, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene was, you know, any of the scenes kind of with Owen and Duncan, specifically talking about, you know, what, why do you come here? You have a beach.
Yeah.
You know, and so many moments, you know, that's kind of where he's first really introduced to this whole place, as he goes to the beach with his stepsister, and that's not a fun experience. And, you know, so locations overall was just kind of a great thing. And it was a really fun movie overall.
Okay. Well, unless there's any, we gotta wrap this up.
Yes, we do.
Sure.
So we do. Anybody have any last words?
Go see it.
I like everybody this movie, and I hope that teenagers nowadays can watch it and really appreciate it like the adults can. And it's sad because I'm still in the middle. You know, I'm young, but I'm still I have that adult perspective, but I can still relate to them like a teenager. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You know, it just brings it all back. Doesn't matter how old you are.
I hope just everyone can enjoy it.
Yeah, all I think everybody can. So go see The Way
Way Back.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. Have fun with it. You know, and you know, just enough to seriousness, but a lot of laughs.
Absolutely,
that's great stuff.
It's a charming, heartfelt film.
All right, great. Phil, you got anything? Is that it, or are we gonna move on to?
I think we should definitely do J.D. Salinger's documentary.
Oh, yeah,
I agree.
Okay,
I think that's a great
follow-up. Okay. Yeah.
All right, Marissa, let them know where they can find you.
You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Serafini TV.
Dimitri.
Right here. Or a Technicolor, but right
there
here.
You go. Phil.
Here at AfterBuzz TV.
Tamara.
At Tamara Berg on Twitter, and my website is TamaraCentral.com.
That's right. You can find me on SerialBuddies.com.
And happy birthday, John.
Happy birthday, John.
Birthday boy. Nice.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining us here at AfterBuzz After Movie. We will talk to you next time.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.